Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on our call today. It's Saturday, October 20th, 2018. It's noon here in the Central Time Zone. So good morning or good afternoon to those of you who are on the call. We appreciate you joining us. I have to say we're not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. So once again, thanks for joining us today. We are going to change things up a little bit. The first part of our call is an introduction to the contract trust and why we feel it is the best entity from which to manage the gains you may have from the foreign currency you own. My friend Judy, who most of you know, will be assisting us on that part of the call. I hear some really noisy stuff in the background.
There's so much noise, Carol. I can't even hear you, Carol. There's so much background.
Are you there?
Okay, Judy, you and I are open line.
Okay. Carol, I'm here.
Okay, so again, the first part, my friend Judy, who you just heard, we'll be assisting on the first part of our call. The second part of the call will deal with some of your questions about operating your trust. And my colleague Jim Knox will be helping you on that part. So just for a little bit of update, my former colleague, Jim Jenkins, who most of you know, has decided to retire. He and his wife, Judy, are doing well, and they look forward to this RV as much as the rest of us do. He sends his best wishes and thanks you for your support these last few years. His health has not been terrific. However, he is getting stronger every day. I speak to him at least once a week, and they're doing fine. So, Judy, would you like to get started?
I would, Carol. Hi, Carol, and all the callers, and Jim on the phone. Like so many of our listeners, I hold some foreign currency that, as we're expecting to revalue soon, I know when it does, I need to somehow protect the money. Can you help me with that, Carol?
Well, as a matter of fact, Judy, I can. And we have a great estate planning and asset protection tool that is known as a contract trust.
Carol, what exactly is a trust?
You know, we've heard a lot about trusts and corporations and LLCs and this is that and the other, and they run the gamut. So, but a trust basically is a fiduciary arrangement that allows a third party or trustee to hold assets on behalf of another party. The concept of a private trust was established in England in the 13th century, and many aspects of trust activities have been codified into law in England and the U.S. and other countries. The trust that we use is a common law, irrevocable contract trust. It's valid and legal in all 50 states, as well as most common law countries. I mean, some people have asked me about Canada. Yes, we can certainly do trust for those folks living in Canada. Its widespread use in Massachusetts in the early 1800s led to the name Massachusetts Business Trust, which many of you probably heard of. The trust that we use is based on the Massachusetts Business Trust. Excuse me. And as some of you are aware, we decided to drop the word business from the name as it caused a great deal of confusion, especially with the banks. For those of you who have older trusts that say business trust on them, we will be happy to replace the cover pages for you, just as contract trust.
Carol, I've heard of trust, but not contract trust. Can you define the differences between them?
Sure. There are statutory trusts and common law trusts, and they can be either revocable or irrevocable. Statutory trusts are created by laws passed by some legislative body, usually a state. Statutory trusts are typically created by gifting or granting property into a trust to be managed by someone else. A contract, parenthesis, business trust, is recognized by the IRS and by the courts as a UBO, or unincorporated business organization. The basis for the terminology common law trust is that they are created under the common law of contracts and do not depend upon any statute for its existence. If, you know, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the United States Constitution guarantees our right to contract.
Carol, would you explain those terms to those of us who aren't familiar with them?
Well, many of us are familiar with the revocable living trust as a means of protecting our estates. While those statutory entities are great at avoiding probate, because there is no probate, the publicity usually associated with probate is diminished. In these respects, the living trust is a little better than a will. Living trusts, like wills, are subject to federal and state inheritance taxes. Revocable living trusts provide absolutely no protection to the assets that have been placed in them. On the other hand, a contract trust is a non-statutory, unincorporated business organization created by a legal document called the Declaration of Trust. A common law contract trust is not really a trust at all, but a contract and trust format. It is a unique agency of commerce that offers numerous advantages in the areas of estate preservation and asset protection.
Okay. Thanks, Carol. Is the business trust revocable or irrevocable, and what's the difference?
An irrevocable trust is one which cannot be changed or amended after its creation. Once assets go into the irrevocable trust, they belong to the trust, and they are no longer the property of the former owner, and that's a very important thing to remember. A properly crafted irrevocable contract business trust can provide the best possible protection from creditors, as you no longer own those assets. But when creating a revocable trust, the grantor retains control and ownership over those assets right up until the time of his or her death. Typically, all that is avoided in a revocable trust is probate. Inheritance taxes may still apply, and there's no protection from creditors.
Interesting. So what are the benefits of a business trust over a regular statutory trust?
A statutory trust is a privilege granted by statute and is regulated by the laws of the state in which it was created. A contract business trust is actually a contract in trust format. Again, the right to contract is guaranteed by Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, which is a common law contract itself. When researching the two, business trust or statutory trust, you won't even find the business trust or contract business trust in the T of the Tom section of the law library, but in the B as in boy section. It's very important to distinguish our trust, the common law contract business trust, as opposed to a statutory trust that any attorney can create for you. You know, it becomes a matter of rights versus privilege. So why should we restrict the operation of our businesses and our lives to the territory granted by legislative privilege when it's really not necessary? Also, the business trust is totally private, not required to be registered or filed in any state unless one is actively involved in a business. So that saves you money, folks. You're not doing filing fees every year. One of the major benefits is that the contract business trust contract allows you to be the trustee of your own trust. You retain full management, control, and benefit of the assets of the trust. There is no one ever between you and your money. Typically, a statutory trust assigns someone else to be the trustee, so you are not in total control of the trust. The contract business trust that we have is irrevocable, again, which means it cannot be changed. No one can force you to revoke the trust to pay someone else. It effectively gives you an empty pockets persona. The most significant distinctions between revocable and irrevocable trusts are the estate tax considerations. Property you place in an irrevocable trust is no longer considered part of your estate, meaning that the property typically isn't included in your estate's value when it comes to determining if you owe death taxes, and if so, how much. It also avoids probate issues. Whereas if you have a revocable trust, it very well could be considered part of your estate. So in our opinion, the contract business trust is the best asset protection vehicle for this RV. The contract business trust is a common law document, again, legal in all 50 states and common law countries. It's private, not required to be registered in any state except Nevada at this point, unless it's actively engaged in operating a business. And that, again, ensures your privacy. Record keeping is minimal. You can do it yourself. You can name your spouse as co-trustee. One or both of you can become executive trustees, allowing one to act on behalf of the other. You can name your children as successor trustees. You can designate one or more successor trustees, specifying that they both become trustees at the same time, or one goes before the other. And you can change this designation at any time for any reason. You can add a bloodline clause to ensure that your family's generational wealth does not fall into another's hands. Supposing you have named your daughter as your successor trustee, and upon her death, it goes to her husband. Well, her husband might get married again. Her husband may have other people he wants to take care of. But if you specify bloodline, when your daughter dies, it has to go to one of her children or a sibling of hers. And we can also have a spendthrift clause, so that no one can hypothecate or pledge his or her possible share of trust income.
Oh, my goodness, Carol, that's a lot of very, very good information. Thank you so much. So let me ask you, why do some attorneys and other professionals deny the validity of the common law contract trust?
Well, we've had this question arise from time to time, and the answers are always the same. They are unfamiliar with common law. These professions are likely more familiar with statutory law, revocable living trusts, and family trusts. For that reason, many attorneys have said that common law and common law trusts are no longer valid. That is not true. This is still a common law country. And if we do go to Jusera, as so many people are claiming we may, common law is still going to be valid. Some of the statutory laws we have on the books probably will not be. At this point, common law isn't even taught in by most major colleges and universities anymore. And while some attorneys may be aware of the Massachusetts Business Trust, once in place, they make no money from them. It's been said that the file cabinet full of revocable living trusts are the attorney's retirement.
Yeah, I have an attorney friend who said exactly that same thing, Carol. He said exactly the same thing. Are you an attorney?
No. Neither Jim Jenkins, Jim Knox, nor I have ever claimed to be attorneys. As this contract trust is a creature of common law, anyone can prepare one. The trust that we use was written by an attorney some 30-plus years ago. We feel we have an excellent, time, and court-tested trust that will benefit you more than statutory trusts created by an expensive law firm. We also provide extensive legal backup for all of our trusts.
Well, thanks for clearing that up, Carol. So let me ask you this. How do I get started?
Well, it's actually pretty simple. We have an application that requests minimal information from you. You know, in this endeavor that all of us are in, we want to keep and enjoy our privacy. So even though you're working with us or any other company for that matter, you still want to keep your private information So the first thing you have to do is name your trust. And strangely enough, this is a bit of a stumbling block for a lot of people. Anything that sounds good to you is okay, and you try for a strong-sounding name. Do not use your surname or sequential numbering. For example, my trust number one, my trust number two. That would indicate there is more than one. I often suggest, if you can't come up with a lack of a better name, name of a favorite pet you had when you were growing up. My husband suggests getting out a paper map, and they do still have them. And, you know, pointing your finger down or whether it lands on a city or a street, that might be a good name for a trust. So if you can't come up with one off the top of your head, just think about it for a while, and I'm sure you will. A lot of people always also use Bible references. So you will need an address for the trust. One thing we strongly suggest is you utilizing a common business practice of domiciling a trust in one of the 7 states do not have a state income tax. Right now, we recommend Wyoming. It's easy to get a mailbox with a street address, and there are stringent laws about contract business trusts. And as an aside, I personally recommend that regardless of where you live, get a mailbox near you to further protect your privacy and anonymity. While we're talking about taxes for a moment, we've all heard this is not going to be taxed on a federal level. It may or may not be taxed on a state level, which is another reason to go to one of the states that do not have a state income tax. Even if it's not taxed on a state level, any interest that you make, any income that you make, is going to be taxed on a state level. So it's one good reason to keep that address in Wyoming or whatever state going. So the next thing you have to do is name a creator. The creator is the third party that's necessary for the creation of the trust and appointment of the first trustee. This person has no further obligation, liability, responsibility, or authority in the trust. It could be anybody. It could be an adult child. It could be a sibling. It could be your next-door neighbor. It could be somebody you work with, just as long as you trust them. Although the creator's role is very important, it's also very short-lived. As I said, the creator can be anybody. It should be someone who lives near you, as you both need to sign several pages of the trust before notarizing. Once the creator has initiated the trust and appointed the first trustee, typically you, he or she exits the contract. And, you know, once again, many people are concerned that the creator will have too much information about your assets. This is one of the most common issues I hear. To verify the trust preamble, the exchanger, you, is hereby bargain, assign, convey, exchange, and deliver to the creator, who, and this is very important, who now temporarily takes and holds title there to the trust organization. All that certain property the exchanger is listed in Schedule A. This exchange does not constitute a sale or gift. The exchange is on paper only, and we prepare all the paperwork for you. So there's not like, okay, I got to take all of my dinar out of my safekeeping box and bring it to Esther when she creates my trust, and then I give it to her and then she gives it back to me. No, it's all on paper, so it's not an issue at all. So you're exchanging your assets with the creator for $21 lawful dollars and 100 trust certificate units. And I usually suggest you lend the creator the $21 or take him or her out to lunch so they're not out anything by assisting you. On the application, you name yourself as investor exchanger number one. If you are married, you can name your spouse as investor exchanger number two. You are the first trustee nominee. Your spouse is the second trustee nominee. And I say nominee because it's an arm's length transaction. The creator could actually appoint anyone of his or her choice to be the trustee. But considering the fact that you are the one that found these assets to begin with, or amass these assets, you are the one that has made the decision to put them in the trust, you are the most likely person to continue to manage them. That's why we say nominee. Your spouse is a second trustee, if you have one. You must name at least one successor trustee. List all the currencies you hold. The amounts are not necessary. I don't know. I don't need to know. You need to add your social so we can obtain an EIN for the trust. And although some people have a previously signed EIN, we always get a new one for your new trust. We make sure that it's done properly for an irrevocable trust and not anything different. Judy?
So, Carol, you mentioned successor trustees. Is that how I take care of my children and future generations?
Yes. When the trust is created, you need to name one or more successor trustees, and that's usually your kids. If they're minors, you can name an interim successor trustee to manage the trust on their behalf until they're old enough or mature enough to handle it. If your kids are minors, I suggest the age at which they take over from the interim successor trustee is to be at least 25. Just because they're 18 or even 21 or even 25 for that matter doesn't mean that they're going to be mature enough to handle all that you have in this trust. You can also, as I mentioned earlier, add a bloodline clause. So all your successor trustees will be from your family. And you can also add the spendthrift clause. And Judy, we're about 20 minutes in. I think it's a good time for Q&A.
Oh, I agree.
So if anybody has any questions, please star six yourself to raise your hand. In the meantime, we can switch gears here and chat with Jim about operating the trust. So, Jim, we don't have any hands up yet, so let me ask you the first thing. How do I get money to spend?
Well, you can borrow it.
Does it mean I have to pay it back?
Well, it depends. If you want to use the trust and to go acquire something, you want to put it in another trust, right? If you want to buy a car, you should put it in a trust. But you can always borrow the money if you need to borrow the money, and you can borrow it from yourself, from the mother lode trust. And you can do it in a simple interest note or no interest note. You can have it, say, a 10-year note, and you can renew the 10-year note. So we want in perpetuity.
Okay, so that's not a big deal. I don't have to worry about, I still have to make a car payment every month. Okay.
No.
Go ahead.
Well, speaking of cars, if you're going to have a car, you want to put it in a trust. You want to put your house in a trust. You want to put your car in a trust. The reason you want to put the car in the trust is because that's probably your largest liability. You have to envision that you're driving down a road, two-lane road, you're going 60 miles an hour, a car coming at you 60 miles an hour. You're closing at 176 feet per second. If somebody sneezes about the time you go by each other, you might have an incident. So it's probably the highest risk that you'll have is an automobile. So you want to make sure that's in a trust. And when you buy the automobile, in the trust. You want to put enough in to maintain the automobile and possibly the enough for the insurance for a few years.
What if I sell the car?
Well, there's two ways to go. You can sell the car out of the trust, or if you really want to get creative, you can actually have somebody create another trust, put the equivalent value of the car in that trust, and you can be the trustee of that trust, and they can become the trustee of the trust in the car.
So that, sounds kind of convoluted. Can
it
I put
is.
If I sell my current car that's in a trust, can I just buy a new car in the name of the same trust?
You can. You can. But if there's two or three other things you have to consider here. All right, now, is the value of the car that you sold less than the new car? If so, then you have to get a loan, or you can borrow the money from the motherlode trust. So if you sell a car out of a trust, you take the cash for the trust, and if you need more money, then you're going to have to borrow it commercially or from yourself. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yep, it does.
It does.
And that goes for a house as well?
Exactly. Same way with a house.
Okay. So, obviously, when you buy the car, the title to the car is going to read, it's going to be the Buick Trust or something to that effect. Is that correct?
That is. As a matter of fact, I have a trust that I have my car in right now, and I've moved cars in and out of that same trust many times. It's called MBZ Company. It's in Oregon. And when I recently went down to put this present car in there, the guy that was doing the transfer says, "Oh, I know who you are. We studied you when we were learning how to use these mechanisms because this thing's been around for 20 years. I thought that was very interesting that they recognized the name and they had used me as a test case for setting up the DMV to be able to receive and use these documents. So,
that's cool. Very cool. The same thing with the house. So the house is going to be titled into 123 Main Street, and so-and-so, whether it be myself or somebody else I choose, will be the trustee on that trust. Is that right?
That's correct.
But it will only show that I'm the trustee and not the owner. So if anybody's looking for me to see if they can get any money from me, they won't see that I own that house. Is that right?
That's correct. They won't see you as being the owner of the house. If they go down and see the documents at the recorder's office, they may see that you're a trustee. But that would be it.
Oh. So it's kind of like hiding in plain sight, right?
Exactly.
Ah, okay. Can I, after I go to exchange, and let's just say for sake of conversation, we exchange at HSBC, can I open another account at other banks so I can sort of spread it around and lessen my risk?
You can. It depends on how you do that. If you do one big motherlode trust, then that can also fund other trusts in other banks.
But can I use the same trust at, say, Chase Bank?
You can, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea. You know, the old saying is, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And while it's, you know, FDIC insurance is certainly not going to be enough to cover any of our losses should that occur, at least if you spread the wealth over, I would think if you spread the wealth over different banks, you are in a better protection.
I agree with that. And you can also buy a large insurance policy to cover everything. That's something we'll talk about because I'm getting the facts on that. We should have that conversation later. But you can buy an insurance policy.
Oh, good. Good to know. So if I take a salary and it's subject to 1091 or K-1, and reportable, it's a tax thing, right, if I take a salary?
If you take a salary, it is. But the benefits that you can receive may not be.
Oh, okay. Want to tell us about that?
Well, there's various ways to structure it. Let's say that you get a benefit package. It's like going down to an employer. When the employer decides to hire you, they'll give you a medical, they'll give you dental as you move along in the company. They may give you a car allowance. They may give you membership to a gym. There's different things they may give you. Some of those, depending on how you structure your personal life, may not be taxable to your number. Some may. So it's a matter of, okay, where does this asset that I'm using, where did it originate? Who's the owner of it? How is it given to me? So you can take a salary, and then you can have a little bit of income from that, and you'll probably have to pay tax, a little bit of taxes on that, depending on how you structure yourself. But some of the benefits could come from different trusts. They could be classified as a gift in some cases.
Okay. So I know we've talked about this before, but everything we do in terms of moving money around, et cetera, making a major purchase, starting a new trust, that should be written up in a minute, right?
Yes, that's what controls the trust. The minute gives the direction. The directions should come from the trustees. The trustees make a decision. The minute is evidence of the decision, and now it becomes part of the trust, and that's how we govern the actions of the trustees or the trust or the employees of the trust.
So how do I learn how to write minutes?
We have a whole plethora of minutes on our website. We'll have over 300 by different categories that you can take and download the minute, and then you put it in your the minute in your book. You would copy it over, put the proper title to the minute, and you'll see how that's done. And then you just, everybody agree to it, sign it. And then it becomes law of the trust.
Oh, in that website, can anybody get into that website?
No, not everybody. Not anybody. Just people that are members of our group, people that have bought trust through us, people that we want to see this. That's it. It's limited. It's an invitation only, basically a club.
No, so in other words, if John Smith, who bought somebody else's trust, wants to write a minute, he can't come to our website and copy the minute.
No, he can't. He can't get in and see it.
I love that. I love that. So we have a lot of, it sounds like we have a lot of advantages other companies that are offering trust do not offer.
We have so much material, it's difficult to keep up with it. We just keep adding more and more and more. We've been in this business so long, we have accumulated so much knowledge, and to put the knowledge into the trust, into the website is a huge task. And we're on top of it trying to upgrade that every week. We did a little bit this week, a little bit last week, and I still have to catch up with some things I obligated last weekend to do. I haven't got that done. I've got to get those legal things on there. But we are adding constantly to this website. And it's going to be a complete, when we're done with it, we'll probably never be done, but as we progress, it's going to be the go-to site for information about how to run a trust and all of the legal information that you want, so on and so forth.
That's fantastic. I think a lot of our clients will get a lot of benefit from that. I think it right now we might want to take another break because we do have a caller here. So let's see. Area code 508, you have a question.
Hi, Carol. It's Alfred from Massachusetts. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Alfred. How about you?
Very good. In the beginning, I'm not sure if you said the trust, it's a trust in the form of a contract, or is it the other way around, a contract in the form of a trust?
It's a trust in the form of the contract and trust format. You got me there.
It's a contract in the format. Okay, great. And the other question I have is, are the banks that we exchange with, like HSBC, going to be familiar with this, or are they going to ask us all kinds of questions about it?
Well, from what I understand and what I've heard, we are going to be required to have a trust.
Yes.
Some kind of trust. The ones that we have been using, the only issues we've had is with smaller banks, and they don't understand what this type of trust is. But my feeling is, and I believe that Jim and most of the people that I speak with would agree, if you're sitting in front of the banker and you say, okay, Mr. Banker, I have X million dollars and I want an account for this trust, they're not going to turn you down.
Okay.
Do you agree, Jim?
I totally agree. They're going to want that money.
Yeah, and we've got so much legal history to this trust that it's amazing. So So I don't think we're going to have any problem whatsoever at the bank.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else have a question right now?
Well, I think that's one thing we need to emphasize is the history of this trust. There is very few people out there that have anything close to what we have as far as history and legal history of this trust. There's just nobody can compete with us.
That's always good to know. We do have another caller here. Hi, Dan. How are you doing today?
Good, good. I assume you remember me then. So,
yep.
First of all, I want to thank you for all the work you guys are doing and the way you helped me out and everything. I really appreciate what they're doing. Quick question. You know, they talk about going to exchange and everything, and you people went over and over about the mother lode trust. And I know you're going to be slammed super busy if this ever happens. So my question is, I'll put the main money in the mother lode trust, but should I use the what they're calling a skeleton trust to operate out of until I can work it out with you people, the paperwork and everything?
I would absolutely put it into our trust. Forget about the skeleton trust.
No, I was going to put maybe I didn't make myself clear. I'm going to put the main money into the mother lode trust, right?
Yes, yes.
But being that it's going to take, you know, maybe a month to get the satellite trust set up, should I use the skeleton trust, you know, like let's say I was going to buy a car or whatever, you know?
Well, I don't think there'd be any reason to. We're giving you some ideas of how you can get money out of the trust initially before you have an opportunity to create those secondary trusts. So I would not deal with a skeleton trust at all. What about you, Jim?
Well, I follow what he's trying to say there. Is we have a mother lode trust. He wants to go buy a car. He wants to protect himself. We don't have a trust ready for him yet. Isn't that what
right.
you're asking? All right.
That's exactly, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know what that skeleton trust looks like. I don't know how strong it is. Never seeing the document, only hearing about it. I don't know. I would be hesitant to use one. I know that, but.
Well, I think it makes the bank your partner.
Yeah, it does. I think you're exactly right, Carol, but I was going to I was going to buy a $50,000 car or whatever. I could put $50,000 over into it and then buy the car, and then I'd protect my main account. That's what my thought was. I didn't know if you guys recommend that or not, but.
Well, I certainly wouldn't put it in your name. I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah.
I would buy it in the name of a trust and have us create your automobile trust as quickly as possible.
Okay. So, well, we'll just we'll get a hold of you. And I just figured you guys would be so busy that it's going to take a lot of percolating, after it happens, you know.
Well, after it happens, there's going to be more than just a few of us.
Yeah.
We're going to have lots of help after it happens.
Okay. Well, the way it sounds, it may go. And, of course, I've been waiting on this forever, but I was just thinking out loud here. So.
Well, that's great. It's a good question, Dan.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. We have another caller here, Jim. Area code the area code is 541. Roa?
Yes. Hello, Carol. This is Manny Roa out here in Nevada.
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for all that you do. I have two questions. One, the first question is, after we do an exchange, if we have more than one currency, can we at that point put all the currencies into the mother lode?
Well, that is something that I've heard a lot of. Now, from what I've heard, Jim, I think you can back me up on this. We will need different accounts, different bank accounts for the different currencies. But just because you have different bank accounts, it could still all be under the mother lode trust. Mother lode trust, you can designate it Dinar, Don, Zim, whatever. They're also going to be accounts under that mother lode trust.
Okay, that sounds easy enough. The second question is, because Jim didn't actually give out any information. Hello, Jim. It's the first time I've heard of you or met you. I'm glad to know you. But he never gave out any information on how to get the website address to access the minutes and the different things that the website's going to offer. Do I just send you an email, Carol, and you send it to me, or how does that work?
Sure. Yeah, either send an email to me at info@indicatorinformation.com or send it directly to Jim and his security@indicatorinformation.com, and we will send you an invite code.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you very much. You guys have a
good
day.
Thank you, Manny. Thank you.
Bye.
See, okay, area code 954.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Lana. I'm calling from Florida. I have a question. I got on late, so I may have missed, so excuse if I'm asking the same question. I will go back and listen to the recording. I have a trust already set up since 2014, but of course it's not, I did open an account, but it was closed because there was no activity. So at the day of closing, I have to put all my money in that mother load trust, divide open extra accounts by currencies. But my question is, if I wanted to give somebody a lot of money to do something, do I put it still all in the trust and then take money out of the trust, or do I have to? I wonder if I could call back some, not to put the entire amount deposit in that account.
Jim, you want to take that one?
Yeah. My first thought on that is you want to put everything in the mother load so you can get your accounts opened up. And then you can gift some money to somebody if that's what you're trying to do, or you can take and create another trust and move the money to that trust to fund that trust for that person. That's how I'm setting myself up. I have multiple people that I'm going to bless, and I'm going to have the mother load trust fund each one of those trusts, and then I'll be the initial executive trustee while I put them through the training class I'm putting together, so they'll know what they're doing, and then they won't blow the money. It all depends on how you want to structure it, but that's how I'm going to do it. I can only give you an example of how I will do it. I can't tell you how you should
do it. Understand. Yeah, the only thing why I was thinking of that too is because when the trust is set up, it's set up with foreign currency, so already have like the trust has all this foreign currency, so if I leave some out, I don't want to expose myself not being compliant with the trust.
Right, and that's a good point. Now, one of the unique things about what you're getting ready to do is you'll have multiple, probably like most of you, have multiple different types of currencies. You may have to have multiple accounts. Well, once the currency is exchanged to the U.S. note or whatever we're going to have at that particular point, then you can fund from any one of those accounts another trust, and then you can have them be the beneficiary and the trustee of that, and you can be on there to guide them through initially. You don't want to just throw a bunch of money into an entity and hand it to them and say, here, have fun.
Exactly.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No. You have
to. For one thing, example for myself, I have been in the process of building a home outside of the United States. So, and this home is being built on cash only, so it's like one brick at a time. So I'm nearing the end, and let's say this thing happened, and I want to take X amount of money to put over there to complete that transaction. How would I do that?
Depends on the country and how you set it up. You can open a trust just like you did here, there, if it's a common law country. And don't know the banking system that you're using, but it should be similar to enough to us, to ours, to work. And then you can fund that trust. And then that trust then could be basically kind of like, not exactly like, a mother load trust for that country. And then you can have a trust that you create for your real estate, and you move the house into that, and it's funded by the trust. Carol, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Okay, good to know. Yeah, and one other thing, question. I've been having computer issues, but I have not been able to get on that website with a passcode at all. You know, So I still have not been able to get on there to see all the products that are available with the letters and stuff like that.
Okay, well, if you
do I need
send,
to send a,
yeah, send me an email, and I'll send you back some instructions. Now, the thing that we see a lot happening here, and I guess we weren't explicit enough, which, you know when you're the author of something, you don't see it from other people's point of view, so therefore you make assumptions. Well, I made some assumptions when I sent out the initial information. I found that I was wrong. You know,
oh,
I know. First time I thought I was wrong. I thought I was wrong last week, but that was a mistake.
Okay.
So what I found is most people will go and they'll get the code from us and they'll go in there and they'll register. And then their computer will remember where they registered. And they'll try and log in on the same registration page, which means you're going to create another identity. And then it gets confusing.
Mm.
So the instructions we're sending out now show that, okay, once you register, don't go back to that page. Now you go to the login page and use the credentials. You use your password or your username and the password we send you, and then you can log in. That's been a common mistake. I'd say 10% of the people that try to get in the website have had that issue because I wasn't explicit. And it's not that they are not smart. It's just that I wasn't smart enough to be able to put the proper instructions out there the first time.
Okay.
So make sure you're at the login. So find the login.
Okay.
When you go to the website, for everybody that's listening, when you go to the website, there's four or five images that scroll across the screen. And then when you're there, you'll see a yellow button in the middle of those images that the button doesn't move. It says click the login. You click on that yellow one, and it'll take you to the right place to log in.
Okay.
But make sure your computer's not trying to send you to the registration page again. So send us an email. I'll send you the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And then
thank you.
I'll go into the because I am the webmaster. For those of people that don't know, I build the website. So you can scream and yell at me. But I will go in there and I will fix it. I'll make sure you can get in.
Okay.
Jimmy, you just mentioned password. Do you want to talk about the password for a moment?
Yeah, I get a lot of complaints about that. But there's a history on this. We got attacked 3 times. Indicator Information website got attacked 3 times, and I just got fed up with it. And what it was is people using two lacks of passwords, you know, like 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, that's easy to hack. And so we have to have some very strong passwords. And since we've been insisting and the computer will not accept weak passwords anymore, since we've done that, we've not been hacked. So when you get this, it's going to be 12 to 16 alphanumeric and, alphanumeric basically. And you need to copy that and use that every time. It's long, convoluted, for an intention. It's just intentionally done that way. Now, on the website, we talk about two programs we suggest everybody get. One is RoboForm. It's $20 a year. We don't sell it. We make no money on that. It says RoboForm. I have over 500 passwords and websites that I can go to and log in with a click of one button.
So you don't have to remember any of those long usernames or passwords, right?
That's right. The other one is called MailWasher, and we use MailWasher Pro. It's a way to actually have you look at your mail on the server, you figure out which ones you want, which ones you don't want. They're deleted automatically from the server, and then you bring them into your computer. So it's nothing ever gets in your computer that you don't agree to have on your computer, which sometimes is a virus.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two programs we highly recommend that you use. But the password is a long one. We have to have it that way, folks. We just can't get around it in this day and age.
Well, doesn't RoboForm have a free version also?
They do. Free version is up to 10 passcodes. So you could have a passcode is a password. In other words, if I was to go to Indicator Information, I would simply open RoboForm. I would scroll down and find that passcode, that name, Indicator Information. I would click on it. It would then open up IndicatorInformation.com. It would put in my username and my password, and then it would automatically open the website for me. One click.
So that would avoid all the pitfalls you just talked about people always going back to the sign-up page.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think that's a really good idea, folks. So.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you guys very much. Thanks for everything.
You're welcome. Thank you. Okay, Jim, I've got a few more questions here that I've heard from clients.
Okay.
I'm using an existing P.O. box, which has other mail going to it, addressed to myself as my trust address also. Is that okay?
You got somebody beep over the top here. Repeat the last part one more time, please.
I'm using an existing P.O. box or mailbox, which has other mail going to it, addressed to myself as my trust address. This is my trust address also. Is that okay?
No. You know, flat out, no. If you do that, you're not proving the true domicile of the trust. So what we've always suggested is, as you said earlier, you may want to get a mailbox someplace or an address in another state. First thing you do is you send a registered letter. And in the letter, you're going to say just simply a little letter to yourself and say, this is to verify that the actual domicile of this trust entity is this state. And you seal it up and you send it. Return receipt requested. So when it goes to the other end, you know that it got there. Then that letter will eventually be mailed to you, because whoever you're using will mail your mail to you. And you keep that sealed up. If you're ever challenged, you would take that letter to a judge, and he would open it up, be the only one to ever open it, the original opener of that letter, and it would say exactly what you wanted to say, that this is the actual domicile of the state. Now they can't refute that. So now you have an address that everybody has to abide by that is the legal address of that trust.
That makes sense. Okay. And right now I'm just reading questions I've gotten from clients in the past. And some of them are a little redundant compared to what we already talked about, but they may go into a little more information. Since my trusts are irrevocable, how can I get money to transfer a gift to my family's relatives and friends? I have a long list of names and people who are badly in need of help. I plan to provide houses and money to their account. Where will I get the money from the mother lode trust or the secondary trust? And how would you structure that? I know we talked about it briefly, but let's just say you want to give money to Aunt Sally. I'm build her a house.
Well, what I would do is I would create a brand new trust, and I would be the executive trustee initially. I would then take the money from the mother lode, and fund that trust to the amount that would take care of Aunt Sally's house, taxes for a while, maintenance, and so on and so forth. And then I would buy the house or transfer the house either way into the trust. And now if it's a real estate, you want to do a real estate trust. And then I would educate Aunt Sally on how to run that thing. And when I was convinced she was going to do it right, then I would resign as trustee.
Okay. So that same scenario would be true for maybe creating trusts for children and funding them. Is that the way you do that too?
Yeah, if the child is a minor, then you have to be the executive trustee until the minor turns of major age, and then they can run it. And again, what's unique about what we're doing, if these children are 8, 10, 12, 15 years old, you've got a great opportunity to educate them about money, about the trust, about how to run their financial life. You've got a great opportunity here to get it done right the first time. So many kids now have no clue about money. All they know is they get the little piece of plastic and they run around that thing and they do things and mom and dad pay the bills and they have no clue.
Exactly.
So it's a great way to educate them.
Yeah, our 20-year-old grandson has virtual money.
Yeah.
He's got a debit card, mom and dad pay the bills. He doesn't, you know, makes no difference. But if I wanted to give him money, and granted he's 20, I'll be 21 in a few months, I would obviously want to stay on as executive trustee until he could figure out what this is all about, right?
Yeah, I know that. I would insist that he goes through some classes and learn the value and how money works. You know, some banking classes, some investment classes.
Yeah.
Now, you've got the leverage now to make him learn.
That's true. And do they have to know where the money came from?
No. They don't. They just know it showed up. They don't have to know that it came from your mother lode trust. They don't have to know how much money is in anywhere. You just have to know how much is in there available to them each month. And that's
it. So in the event we do have to sign an NDA, we're not going to be plagued with, oh, my goodness, I can't tell anybody where I got this money. How do I tell Junior where this money came from? They don't need to know.
Well,
It's clean and clear money. They don't need to know the origin of the money. Would you agree?
Well, even further than that, it's none of their business.
There you go.
I mean, flat out, it's not their business. They got the money. That's all they were looking for. As long as you can prove it's clean funds, which you'll have letters for that, and you might want to attach one to the trust, put it in the minutes of the trust. This is the clean funds letter that was issued for this, and that's all they need to know.
That's a really good idea. Really good idea.
Now I have my moments.
Let's see. I'm reading these questions. Can the trust give any amount to any individual of any kind? You know, not just another trust or nonprofit. Let's say I want to give the mailman a gift. Can I do that?
Sure, up to a certain amount. It changes. I think it's $15,000 this year. Maybe it's $18,000. That you don't have to worry about. He may have to pay some tax on it. I don't know. It depends on what state he's in.
Yeah.
But you could. If it's somebody you want to gift a proper gift, a lot, then you want to do it with a trust. But if you just want to give them a small gift, sure.
Yeah, okay. And so individual tax gifting laws still apply if the gift is given from the trust rather than for me personally, right?
Correct.
Okay. All righty. Let's see. We're getting a little bit low on time. I think we've got time for one or two more. Okay, will we need a separate EIN for each additional trust? If there's is it necessary?
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to have a separate EI for every trust. Now, the unique part about this is if you want multiple trusts, we're only allowed to get one EI number a day per Social Security number. So if you need five trusts, it's going to take us 5 days. Or if you have a Social Security number for your spouse, well, then we can cut it down to 2.5 days.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind. So when people get ready to give us, okay, we need five trusts tomorrow. Oh, we can do the trust tomorrow, but you can't get the EI number until we, one a day for Social Security number.
Okay. If we currently have an art collection or some collection of significant value, should we have a trust account set up now along with other non-real property items?
I do. I have everything ready to go. In fact, I was just reviewing this morning before the call. I have 12 trusts all set up and with EI numbers ready to go. So I'm ready no matter what happens.
And Judy and I have referred to this in the past as Goody Trust, because that's the one that's going to buy the jewelry and the artwork and the fur coat and that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Another one. This is going to be we got one more question, and then I think we're going to have to take a break here. Again, area code 954.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Summer here. How are you doing today?
We're doing well. How about yourself?
I'm fine, thank you. A quick question about setting up multiple trusts from my mother-in-law trust. Would that be a taxable event, or is that allowed? I'm thinking specifically of setting up trusts for my children.
Yep.
Well, now over the age of 18, both.
Okay.
I didn't hear the first part. There was some clicking going on. Carol, did you hear it? Can you tell me what she said?
Yeah. If she sets up additional trusts for her children, would that be a taxable event?
No, it won't be, because if you use the system that we're setting up, you use the mother load to fund each one of those, and there would not be a taxable event.
Is there a time limit on doing that, or can we do that 5 or 10 years down the road?
Do it any time you want.
That's really good to know.
Oh. The system you're setting up, is that on the website that you're creating?
I can't hear her, Carol. There's
Yeah, I think she's speaking too close to the mic. Will that information be on the website?
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. There's so much information there. You may have a little tough time trying to find it because we have probably 350, 400 documents on there right now. But, yes, everything you'd want to know about trust, if you've got lots of time, that website's really got a lot of good information.
Yeah, I need to be able to get in. I'll try and do that this week. I think I tried once and it didn't work.
Don't hesitate to contact us. We'll walk you through it. If you need to, contact us by email. We'll call you. I'll go in and look and see what's going on. And then I'll call you and we'll walk you through the process to make sure you can get in. It's important to us that you get into that. That's one of the major things you're paying for. So it's important to us to make sure everybody has access to this website. If anybody listening to me has an issue, just security@indicatorinformation.com. Give me your phone number, your name, say I can't get in. If you know your username and know your, especially your username and your password, put it in the email. And then I can go in and see what's going on. Now, some of the times we have found that, and we did turn off one of the fields because people kept getting the answer wrong. And it said, what country? Well, some people put U.S. or they put USA. Some people put United States. Well, it is looking for United States. And so we just turned that field off. But there's other fields that people get wrong, or the other ones, they sometimes type their username wrong. So just give me the information. I'll make sure you get in. That's my job.
Okay. What happened is that I had Charlotte sent me a password, and then I think I had to fill out a form or something, and it never did quite work. Would I need to get that redone again? Get a new password?
No, if you send me the password, if you have the password and the username sent it to me. Now, here's the unique thing, everybody. You have to listen to this one very closely. I've set this site up to where nobody can break in and get your password. I can't even see your passwords. I'm the creator of this thing. I'm the webmaster. I've set up to where I can't see the passwords. Once the passwords, if you lose the password, I can't get the password back for you. But I can get you the same password. Or I can get you a new password. But the reason I set up this way is anybody breaks in, they will not be able to go in and get any further information about you or anybody else. So nobody can see the password. It's encrypted.
I thought the one she sent us, you'd use it and then you can create a new password. Was that the idea?
No, the idea is to use the one that we sent you, the very strong one. And you may have tried to change your password to an easier one to remember, and the website will not let you in. That could be the case. So what we would do is we would negotiate, and that's the key word here, we'll negotiate a password that you can remember that I feel strong enough to protect the other people on the website, and I will assign that password to you.
Okay.
You know, you could use a password phrase, you know, like, I don't know, whatever phrase. It could be 5 or 6 words, a sentence, you know, maybe a line from your favorite poem. I don't care. As long as you can remember it and it can't be hacked, I have no problem with it. I'll set up any way you want.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So
thank you.
Just send me the email and I'll make sure it works for you.
And you said security@indicatorinformation.com?
That's it. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What's your name again? I'm sorry.
My name is Jim Knox, KNOX.
Yeah, Jim. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Okay.
Well, Jim, we're at the top of the hour, so maybe we had cut the Q&A off for a while, for now. But from what we're hearing, our RV may be here very soon. And granted, we've been hearing that for a long time, but it does sound very real this time. So I encourage all of you to be prepared. We've heard that the banks may offer some kind of temporary skeleton trust if you don't have one. As I mentioned, not only will that make the bank your partner, they may see you as being unprepared, and as such, they may be less likely to negotiate rates, perks, or benefits for you. So, you know, if people have been saying for a long time, be ready. If you are contemplating a trust in any fashion right now, be ready. As I think it was Dan brought up earlier, once this thing hits, we are going to be inundated. You know, right now turnaround time has been literally a couple days by the time it gets back to you. But post-RV, it's going to be closer to a couple weeks, regardless of how many people we hire. And I'm sure you would agree with that, Jim. So
Yes, we
do encourage you to, if you can do it now, do it now. You need to be ready.
Exactly.
So with that, I would like to sign off for the day. So, Judy, thank you for your assistance. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Carol. Thank you, Jim. Everybody, it was a very great call.
Thank you. And thank you, Jim, as always. Would you like to add your contact information?
Sure. My name is Jim Knox, K-N-O-X, and you can give me at security@indicatorinformation.com. You can call me, 503-583-6791. I prefer not to work midnight, so make sure you realize this is I'm on the West Coast. I live in Oregon, so I try and work between 9 and 6 5 days a week, but I do work weekends. Obviously, I'm here. But, yes, we will work with you. If you come up with a question at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and I won't refuse the call. So just go ahead and give me a call.
Thank you, Jim. And my name is Carol Worlius. You can reach me at 425-820-8090 or info@indicatorinformation.com. I am now in the central time zone, but I still work hours about 9 to 6, Monday through Friday, typically available by the phone. And I have to put in a little disclaimer here, folks. A lot of you are aware that I have moved recently. It's been a very protracted move. Just got my computer back up online the other day. Thank you to Jim. Finally in 100% working mode. If I have missed your call or missed your email, please try again. We do try very hard to answer all calls and all emails. I don't want to be painted with the same brush as some other companies are. They do not answer their calls. So please accept my apologies. If I've missed you, please try me again. So, again, I'd like to thank you all for your time and attention, and go RV. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.